So anyway, the question was, how can we build citizen responsibility here? Now, so we have different levels of citizens, right? We have long-term village people and short-term for the summer. A lot of people come here for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks in the summer. And then a lot of us come for a few days, a week, and a range between 1 and 2 weeks. So the question was, how should the village organize people for citizen responsibility? So do you have some thoughts on that?
I do, but I don't know if that's the one we want to pick.
Okay. Then another one is, along with that, what are promises in the community? So when you come here, you agree to certain things, right? I mean, you're expected to recite, right? But, so each of us in different ways makes promises. What happens when we don't keep our promise? And who polices? So how do we hold people, how are we going to hold, if we have promises, then how do we keep those promises? How should we handle that? And where should that responsibility fall? So that's another question. Then, how can we build this is related to another one, a hospitable community to serve the mission, which is right over here, rather than a community that's built on customer service. And so we all come in with our individual missions for our vacation or our time off or whatever, and now let's get into customer service.
Yeah.
So it's about, how do we build shared hospitable? How can we be in a shared way, in a community way, hospitable to serve that mission? That'd be another one. Another one is, any ideas that you might have on revenue producing and saving strategies for the village? Because it does take some revenues for a village like this to operate. So anything that you've seen where we could save or produce new revenues. Another one would be recruitment here. It becomes difficult in a village like this because some of us have what I call general skills. So we can kind of fill in, we've got energy, we can work hard, we're kind of the generalists. But other people here in the village have very specialist skills. So they know how to, they're a plumber or they're electrician. And sometimes then it's perceived that some people's skills are more valuable, their gifts are more valuable. And that can create some sort of internal tension. So when we recruit them, how do you recruit where you value everybody's gifts and still say, it's unity without uniformity, right? Because I think sometimes that's difficult because it's like, well, some are a titch more special because they have specialized skills that are absolutely essential to the life of the village, whereas some people like myself, I can fill in a lot of places, but I can't be the plumber or I can't, you know, and so I'm sort of the generalist. So how do we recruit for that and still embrace everybody's talents? And how do you give that message so that it doesn't create sort of a tension and a residue in the village, in the life of the village? Another thing would be the whole question of diversity in this village and a multicultural, multiracial presence. And is that important for the life of a village like this, for you, for others, and why? And then how do we build that? Any ideas on that? This notion of even that, how do we help people? If this is a community, how many of you came here with the sense that you were coming into a community?
Okay. As opposed to a resort.
A resort, right. Okay. So I think the assumption is that even if we agreed that this is a community, we'd have different understandings, mental images in our mind of what a community was. So in order to sort of all sort of pull together as a village, how do we then build pretty quickly a shared sense of a community? How do we do that? How can we do that? Some ideas of how we might build that sort of shared sense in a village. And you can see how if we don't share that, then things can go awry, right? Because because we're working very different agendas. Another thing is that this village is based in, is a rich history of being based on volunteerism. And yet the larger world has set it up so that fewer and fewer people sometimes have resources to volunteer. So then how do you do that in a way that there's a sense of justice here? Because what if somebody wants to come and they need some support, they have college loans to pay off, or they have a sort of other commitments, or they don't have resources that will allow them to sort of live in the village. So how do you, again, it's another question of diversity. And so that people feel that there's, it's fair and just here. And you can see how that might create some tension. So how do we resolve issues like those? You can keep your answers and then I'll write them.
I'm already forgetting. What was that first question again?
Another question that some people here in the village talked to me about was interest in sort of open communication and ownership. How do we build ownership here so that even short-term people feel that this is my village? As opposed to, for me, when I first came here, I didn't know how things worked very well. So I felt very dependent. And it was Martin's village, Zuni's village, longer-term staff. It's like, show me how your village works. And yet, the hope is that we'll pretty quickly have a village where there's ownership. But there's also communication problems. So some groups talk to, some groups in the village talk to themselves. And they talk about other groups. So how do you deal with those? And often around issues of power, I think, in my opinion. So who's in charge? Or somebody's perception of who's in charge. So those are some other issues here in the village, just to kind of help to create an environment where there's an openness.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sharon, most every Lutheran that I talked to knew about this place.
Uh-huh.
Being a Methodist, I had never heard of it.
So you have an excuse.
But then, I always wanted to go there. And uh-huh. I said, well, why didn't you? So two friends of mine said, well, Grace, if you can go there, I'm going. So they came. They're coming in September.
Okay.
And I just wondered how you could get those Lutherans to come, because this is a wonderful place. And they've heard about it, and they said they always wanted to go. Well, why aren't they coming?
So that would be another question, is what are the barriers for people who don't come here? Well, and that might be...
But also they're a long ways away like we do. It's an expensive trip to come here. And also, it's not easy. You have to fly from one place to another and take the bus and stay overnight at Chelan and take the boat. So you've got to plan your transportation quite a while ahead of time. And make sure the schedules are going to work out. It's not an easy place to get to.
I just commented both of those because I think they're part and parcel of the same question. I think one of the realizations I've come to is that when people make choices, and I choose to not make it a priority, if I've always wanted to go but I don't go, or transportation is an issue, it's a matter of priorities. And I make choices, we made choices to come here. We could have made choices to do something else, and it's a reflection of priorities.
Right.
And so I can believe that there are economic reasons why people would say that that's too expensive. I can't get from the Midwest to the West Coast. Legitimate reason. But other times people make choices that are simply reflection of priorities. And I should not feel guilty because they didn't come. Now, if it's a financial reason and there's something I can do to support that through a, you know, it was one of the questions you said, resources and people that are willing to be volunteers, but they might have a college tuition to pay for, then, you know, a scholarship program or an endowment or a trust or something set up to support that, you know, that, you know, those are all possibilities.
And scholarships, they do have, and I'm just wondering, what is the health of that scholarship fund? I wonder how many people they really can scholarship here. I'm just curious the number of people that are able to benefit from that support to make it possible to come And how many people know about that opportunity to come under a scholarship assistance?
So one of the things that you think might be a revenue-producing idea would be to develop a scholarship fund.
Well, they have that, I know. They do have that for people to be able to come.
But it's not been, and so it exists, but people like myself don't even know it exists.
Yeah, exactly.
And if it were very intentionally, you know, it's just like we took an offering the other night, said this money is going for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
I'm not offended when I come to be a Lutheran or an ecumenical camp of any kind where somebody said, and tonight we're going to take up a special offering for this specific purpose. And it's, those that feel like it will contribute. I mean, that's something I would make a contribution to.
I think one of the things that probably, you're saying that every Lutheran you talk to knew about it. I talk to a lot of Lutherans who say, Holden Village, what's that?
In the Midwest, we don't know.
I'm wondering if Holden
Village... I was going to say, half the state of Minnesota is here anyway.
I know. I'm wondering if there is some way in which there can be, maybe not every year, because it would get to be expensive, but periodically a mailing to all of the Lutheran churches. I know this isn't for only Lutherans, but if we could at least get the information out to them, because we have been here before, and there are others in our church who know what Holden Village is all about, but I'm sure that there are many people in our congregation who don't know what Holden Village is.
I think so, you'd want to ask the question too, is it what's the enrollment level at? Because you better not publicize if you can't deliver. And if all you do is set people up to be disappointed because enrollments are always maxed anyway. And now we've got 10,000 other Lutherans or non-Lutherans that want to come, and you can't accommodate it. All you do is frustrate them.
Yeah. Can we get to the question that some raised here in the village about a multicultural presence or diversity? Because that may be related to the recruitment piece.
I was just going to add further to this publicity, is that there is the place you can also give out the information about scholarships.
And also, what if they had an article or something in the Lutheran once a year or something?
I don't think that particular media is going to create much diversity here.
No, I don't mean diversity, but to let people know that there is such a thing as Holden Village. That's
so
what I'm talking
about.
Okay,
now to get back to the question about diversity.
But let's just assume that we've got people coming. What would you do? First of all, the question is, why is it essential to that mission, or is it, to have a diversity of people here?
Well, I think people are, in general, pretty much comfortable with the people that they know. And some of them come in and everybody's a stranger around here, and then it's a little harder for them to feel welcome. So I think that's part of it.
I found this a very friendly place.
Oh yeah, it's friendly.
I mean,
no, I'm not talking about friendliness.
No, I'm
some citizens in the village think that maybe we should work to make the village more diverse.
I do too.
More representative of the world that we live in.
That's right.
Right, and I think that...
I think it's been interesting this week to notice we have a few blacks. We, of course, have a couple of Koreans because we have a little granddaughter who's Korean. But I there's one group of people here, I don't know what their ethnic background is, whether they're Italian, Jewish, the Middle East. I don't know what. It's been interesting to see that.
Everybody's welcome now.
Oh, yes.
Well,
yes.
Sure.
I think it gets back to why would there not be a wider range of diversity here? And if I leave to go somewhere else to join, quote, community of people that I don't even know, it's very hard for me to feel like I'm in community with strangers. Mm-hmm. That's part of an earlier question, that how do we expedite that process such that the feeling of community and responsibility and accountability within the community take hold like that, and that's very difficult to do, so you have to be very intentional about it. And this is sort of getting away from that question, but the orientation process, which was sit and look at 30 to 45 minutes of slides, I think, was extremely helpful. I think it just needs to go beyond that in terms of why are we here this week? What is it like to be part of a village versus coming to a resort? What is it? I mean, there's got to be some real intentional dialogue, and to me, you probably can't do that in less than probably a half a day. Now, if somebody show up here to say, I had to give up my first half day to sit through all this, not everybody's going to want to do that.
Right.
But I don't think you're going to get at some of those issues without being very intentional about it and structuring it in a way that, you know, it's ABC, and not everybody's going to buy in, but at least they were told what ABC is and what the expectations are and what we need and a whole number of things.
Structure that right into the program.
So maybe it's getting, before people come to the village, yep, to make sure that you're coming in as a citizen, mm-hmm, that you have some responsibility as, right, a citizen in the village to participate in bringing that to life.
That's right.
To get people to think about that, so that would go out beforehand, and then, mm-hmm, the orientation would be set up with a dialogue to get people thinking about, well, now how are you going to make a contribution to village life? Would that be
I think it has to be part of the dialogue, and I think it also is exactly what you said, that it has to be already on the table before people show up here, that we come with an expectation, and I'm part of some volunteer organizations where as part of my own intentions of being a member, there's an expectation of a minimum contribution of volunteer hours. Mm-hmm. So if I come to Holden Village knowing full well that as a family unit we're responsible for 2 or 4 hours of generalist type responsibilities or specialist, you know, facilitation of something, whatever it is that we might be capable of, mm-hmm, you got to pay that price. Mm-hmm. And I think that also lends more meaning to your part of being a member of the community. All of a sudden you've lent definition to what is it to be responsible in the community.
Is that in fact the case? Is everybody advised to do something?
No, but I'm saying maybe it needs to be built in.
That'd be a good idea.
Part of the literature I receive when I sign on the dotted line saying I'm going to Holden Village is that a member of a family unit responsible for some number of hours of contributing.
And then you have permission and you'd have a listing?
Yeah, you have a checklist of an hour here and 2 hours here, and these are all the areas of need we have on a weekly basis, and the, mm-hmm, 3 days or the 5 days you're here, here's what we've got to have filled, and we've got 400 people now. What does that amount to? You know, somebody's got to do some structuring of categories and assignment. But
I noticed healing is number one. How many people come here who are so hurting that they're just thinking about themselves and trying to get their act together?
Yeah. I think a lot. I mean, I know I was just totally, totally wiped out from work. And I wanted to just have a week of
so being
right
at
all. Yeah. And so I think it is important to lay out expectations of what it means to be a citizen here, because I think I would resent someone telling me that I needed to do so many hours if my agenda was different. But you're saying it's important that we are clear in our communication about what Holden Village is when you come here.
So it's an art form of adjusting the village mission with the individual mission.
Yep.
So you come with a mission of you need to take care of yourself and, right, do some work.
Yeah.
So how might that, what could be done? How could that be suggested so that you still want to be here?
Yeah. Well, I think if you lay it out beforehand, as you were saying, in the literature or whatever that goes out, that is part of being a part of this community, which hopefully will bring about healing, renewal, and refreshment, that a part of being this community is contributing something, and the minimal amount of hours, I think that's fine. As long as I know ahead of time that, yeah, that's the expectation, mm-hmm, that's,
you know, if you look at, because the laundry list that I heard you read, Sharon, sounded like coming from staff who understands what it takes to run the village and has a mindset that says, here's what we need to have accomplished. You also have then the clientele, the customers showing up, now we're getting back to this customer service. We, the customers, show up with this expectation, and there's probably 80% the same.
Yeah.
You know, renewal, healing, I mean, there's no incongruity there. There's probably 20% where the staff is saying, and oh, by the way, here's what it takes to run this place, and these people didn't show up with that in mind.
Right.
But 80% of it's the same, and I don't think that 20% is irreconcilable, especially, mm-hmm, if we talk about it beforehand. Yeah. I sign on the dotted line, I'm coming for renewal, and oh, by the way, I gave up some amount of my time here.
So we can help each other, too. If you, right, set it up, as you suggested, having some kind of dialogue,
right,
then somebody that thought they needed more time for themselves,
mm-hmm,
we could help out too, don't you, yeah, think? We could work out some of those things.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, when you think about how that dialogue should go, what the structure would be, it would take somebody adept at facilitating that discussion, mm-hmm, to do that day in and day out. Somebody would want to jump off the third floor after you know, a week of that. But there are multiple people coming with multiple skills, and if you read off the menu that says for the next 3 hours, here's the things we need to talk about in dialogue, not discussion, in dialogue, what it means to be a part of. I don't think people are offended by that. Maybe if I wanted to go fishing the first afternoon I got here, I had to sit through a 3 hour dialogue, you know, but it, at the end of 5 days, we're writing it home.
Well, Sharon, are you getting the feedback for staff that there is an imbalance of?
I talked to a variety of people in the village. I tried to talk to short term, long term, just a variety of people to come see what was on their minds.
Right.
Ideas or thoughts or questions that they had that they thought might make this place work better.
Because there is a sense then right now that there is a burden, too much of a burden on the long term people, and that the guests coming in for a shorter time aren't contributing at all. I mean, that is there a perception of that right now?
I think there's a residue that there's not. We could do a better job of explaining citizen responsibility in the village, as opposed to even the words that we use. We have staff and visitors, right? Or guests.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. I mean, those words. That's different from we're all citizens.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
And so it sets a certain, at least in me, and that's just me and my expectation of the difference between guest and staff. And I don't think well-meaning people sometimes just don't understand what, you know, because I think many of us are in places where we don't really participate in village life any longer,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At least a geographic community. And so one of the reasons I came here was to just kind of see how a village works, different from one that I live in.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that the people who respond very well when they ask for help? Like, we need somebody in the laundry. We, each day, if they would say what they needed, mm-hmm. the people would really volunteer and help?
That's true. And the other side of that is that we all need to share responsibility.
Right.
So that puts a burden on certain people to sort of be policing, you know, of always keeping track.
Yes.
You know, it takes, and you know how much energy it takes to keep track of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some of us are getting more and more conditioned to that somebody else is always in charge. And then they'll just let us know when to do things. I know that's true for myself.
And
so
you want us to volunteer.
Well, is about citizen responsibility. If you think of everybody here in the village as a citizen, and we all share responsibility,
mm-hmm.
then how could we set up a system
mm-hmm.
that might more effectively bring that to life?
And I think, you know, I was filtering what that dialogue from my own paradigm, but I think I'll volunteer, but you have to let me know what the need is. And so it takes a lot of energy to communicate the need, and we're saying there could be a better system than the one in place. If communication is the vehicle, and we believe people respond, and invariably they do, then just, is there a more effective, efficient system to communicate the need?
Mm-hmm. I don't guess there is. I mean, I know Carol wants some people out on the trail, but I wasn't at the Pecos this morning to hear that. If I'm not to hear that, I can't go.
Mm-hmm.
If there was some place that messages were just available anytime you wanted to go take a peek at.
Yeah, like maybe just the sign-up sheet at that kiosk. You know, today, these are the volunteer opportunities.
And they do some of that, I think, but it's not a system.
Or somebody didn't show up on the garbology
team. Yeah.
But I mean, I've been in the dining hall and I haven't raised my hand. I mean, they need two people.
Yeah.
And there are how many? 200 of us in there?
Right.
And they get one person?
Right.
What's that about?
And that, I think, gets back to your point that there could be a more effective system to do that. Because if I plan tomorrow's activities today, and then tomorrow morning somebody says, no, by the way, we need somebody in garbology this afternoon, I've already got my day plan, I'm not going to raise my hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel guilty then when I don't do that because I'm willing to volunteer, but what's the effective system then so that I can incorporate my own volunteerism into that system? I'll do it, but I'm not going to do it at the expense of now my family doesn't have anybody go up the trail with them. It's just not going to happen.
Well, if they ask for volunteers a day ahead of time instead of that, we want volunteers this afternoon.
So advance?
Well, it needs to be some forewarning. And there are some things that you know on a daily basis. We need 10 people, so every Monday morning we post the sign-up sheet for the rest of the week. And if I know I'm leaving on Friday and I can't do garbology then, I better pick one of the other days. but.
Right now, they ask, you know, at lunch, whatever it is, they want somebody this day to do it now. And if, like he says, if the days were already planned, what they want to do, that's going to disrupt their plan.
I saw somebody working on a chart over there this morning, and my expectation was she was assigning the staff here certain responsibilities for the month. It looked like a monthly chart. But if, as part of that orientation process, the sign-up sheet is in the Village Commons building over there on every afternoon when they're doing that orientation, right out of the chute, people can say, well, I know I got to do this, I better sign up on this day, and then I can plan the rest of my week around what else I've got. Part of the orientation process is probably the place for that.
So if more of the short-term visitors or citizens would take on some of those responsibilities, that would free up some of the other citizens that know multiple tasks to be more available on sort of things that come up at the moment.
The wording is important. Visitors or guests who think, oh, I'm a disaster, I'm going to be waited on, you know.
Yeah. The whole issue of language, a shared language, you know, I come in and view myself as a visitor and staff here saying, well, you're a citizen, and wait a minute, those things aren't reconciled at all in my mind.
So what would you feel okay if we call people citizens here?
Yes.
Short term?
Certainly not guests.
Not guests.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Because there's a definite, different definition. If I'm a citizen of a community, then obviously I have some responsibility.
Well, you're a citizen of our home instead of a guest.
What about in terms of then, who holds citizens accountable? If everybody, well, what happens when people make commitments or promises and then don't follow?
Well, I see you.
How should that be handled?
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Does that happen a lot?
Well, we're all human beings, so some of us forget.
Normal distribution of behaviors would say that 10%, you get 10% at the high end and 10% at the low end and 80% in the middle, and you don't even need to worry about it.
We run
10%. Of your volunteers probably aren't going to do what they said. No, the question is, what do you do about that 10%?
We run gynecology to five people on gynecology, and she says two out of 7 days or two out of 6 days, they're short numbers.
So somebody gets sick or somebody forgets or somebody comes up, or you know, they're hard choices. What if you have a sick child and you've made a commitment? So it's bound to come up. So then the question would be in the village, how, you know,
then you better ask for one or two more volunteers for each job than you need, then you might come out
even. Then you might show up and you've got more than enough, but at least.
Could you sort of be responsible for having someone replace you?
Well, if you don't know anybody, it's hard to find somebody.
I guess so.
Yeah, there are some cases where that would work. It's kind of like overbooking passage on an airplane. You assume that at the last minute there'd be a no-show, so if you overbooked by 10% on the garbology crew, worse is going to have you excuse somebody if you don't need them.
Yeah.
But there are other things where that process probably doesn't work, where people need to be there, they don't show, and the issue of accountability is now on the table. What do we do? And I think that whole issue of being a policeman, putting somebody here in a staff role as a policeman to enforce, is real negative, but I don't know what the alternative is. I mean, you'd say, you know, ultimately, we're all responsible for the life of the community, and somebody's going to have to step in if, you know, if I don't show up, no, what's the right thing to do?
Unless you have another list of people who say, I'm available if you need.
As a substitute.
A substitute or an alternate.
I mean, if Sharon doesn't show up for the session, what do? We cancel the session? Or do
I beg your pardon?
If Sharon doesn't show up for her assigned session, or Carol doesn't show up for garbology, or what? Mm-hmm. What do? What's the process that we'll agree to use when that situation arises? We find somebody to plug in Sharon's session, probably an integrated session. Mm-hmm. In some cases, you can plug somebody in for garbology.
Yeah, she's not a volunteer, however.
But what about, you know, there are lots of essential duties in a village, absolutely essential duties. When you have a fire alarm, what if nobody showed up?
Well, nobody shuts the alarm.
But we do make choices about what's important,
right?
And as individuals,
well, no,
you know, some people say, "Well, maybe garbology isn't important," or you know, I mean, it's very difficult. It's just, it's this whole notion of holding people responsible in a village life.
Well, you do get a staff with a commitment of a minimum of 3 weeks, isn't that it, for certain things?
I think so. That's the minimum.
Well, how does that work, system work? Do you get enough people here to handle most of the tasks on that volunteer basis to be here for a minimum amount of time? Is that working or isn't it?
I don't know. The other question is,
well, for these essential things that have to be done, if they're hired to come here for that.
I think there are enough, my understanding is there's enough people in the village to do the, I mean, villages have to find ways to do the work among itself. I mean, not just this village, but any village, right?
Or they want citizen relief.
So, in a way, you know, those of us who are here shorter term, essentially there are a lot of volunteers in this village that are working on our behalf, right? Because they're all volunteer.
They're getting their, what, they get their board and meals free for volunteering for a certain length of time, isn't it? Now, my question is, are they getting enough people to do the essential jobs through that system?
I think so. I haven't heard otherwise. Martin might be able to clarify that. Do you get the applications for volunteer staff at any time?
Basically.
We
don't have any extras.
But you do meet the needs pretty much.
Hand them all right now.
But see, that's still on the old paradigm of we have staff and visitors.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, as opposed to if we all came here, what would this village look like if we all came in and said, I'm going to be citizens of a new village for 3 weeks, or 2 weeks, or 1 week? Mm-hmm. You know, then you wouldn't assume that there we'd have sort of a staff of servants, if you will, that would sort of take care of us during the time we're here, right? Mm-hmm. Now, and so, you know, what would we do to sort of make that work? What would people be willing to do to make that work? And encourage people to participate more in the life of the village as a citizen.
Well, there has to be a good understanding.
I think if they need to be willing. Like when they can, I went over and helped 2 hours in the laundry, we're going tomorrow. I loved it.
Okay.
To think that I could help.
Well, I think, too, you'd sort out very quickly. You wouldn't have people arriving if it was communicated that was an expectation. You wouldn't have people arriving saying, well, this is a surprise and I don't like it.
Right.
You'd know right out of the chute that some minimum requirement, and so you show up as an expectation to be a contributing citizen.
I've done something to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So along those lines then, let's try it at another angle. What could you do here, or how have you felt ownership in the life of this village? What has happened for you that has helped you feel really connected or having a stake? Or do you?
I think there's a lot of good things going on here. For instance, I can't remember when the last time I was here, if these things were all existed or not, but the buildings and everything seem to be in pretty good shape, but there must be a continual repair going on. And there's signs in all the rooms telling you what's essential about saving water, what you have to do before you leave, and there's a lot of communication by signs around here
that
answers a lot of questions of visitors, or guests or citizens. So when they come here, they go to the room and they've got all this pretty well laid out, they know what's expected, and I think they're doing a pretty good job of that.
Sure. So that helps you have some ownership in sort of a different way of life.
What we're expected to do.
It educates you as to kind
right,
of something.
Very quickly, you don't have to ask a lot of questions.
I was in the laboratory the other day and some lady said that she had been here, I'm thinking 4 years ago. She said the new three that have taken over has made such a difference. She said, look, we have a bench. She just pointed out, you know, so many things that have been taken care of. And so she thinks that there's a lot having been done the last few years to make this. And I'm sure would have worked too if she had, as you say, known what she came in.
And what I'm asking is a question about shared responsibility,
right.
And so that we all feel this is our village, and that we have a stake and a responsibility in sort of making it work. Now, I'm not suggesting that the village is problem-laden, but the life in any village has questions and problems that always have to be addressed. And citizen responsibility is some shared responsibility in addressing those questions, and they never go away. That's part of the interesting thing about life in a village, is that, you know, you never arrive. And so I don't mean to suggest by bringing this up that there's trouble on the horizon.
No.
But I went looking for it to say, well, we have some questions that we might puzzle about that we could make a contribution by kind of thinking about it, maybe coming up with some fresh ideas.
Maybe in the literature that you send out, that could be mentioned. There's no shared responsibility. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that doesn't really come across in the brochure that Olden has right now. And I think that would be an easy thing to change, is to have that as maybe just a panel or really bold it somehow in the information that goes out. And then I think...
I suggest you go one step farther and make it a signed document, because it forces people in to read it before they sign it.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't the sign your mortgage on your house away, but it's an admission that you at least look up, because if it gets sent out as a bold type sidebar someplace, I look at that and I don't read it, and then I show up and I still don't know if I have to sign
some
something.
Some people might not come. You could say, you could give them a choice.
That's right. They made the choice, they read it, and they said, I guess I was looking more for a resort than I was a village, mm-hmm. and I choose not to go. Now, you may end up long-term with a different sort of an issue that the enrollment process is declining and now we have to re-examine, but I think it gets back to the life of the village.
Mm-hmm.
It's never over. You continuously examine, are we looking at this the right way? What can we do to make it better?
Right. And I think it's important to communicate that before you come here, because when you ask the question about ownership, I don't have a sense of ownership for this village, but I feel a part of the place when they welcome every new load of people by name and
yeah.
have them stand up, and so you are introduced and you become part of the group in that thing. And there are lots of different activities. You are made to feel like, take advantage of what you want, do your own thing, whatever,
mm-hmm.
in whatever range of right. things you can fit in here. So I think that makes you feel a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the sense of ownership, unless you know, communicate to me before I come here, you are going to be a part of a village, and part of that is going to be a contribution of some volunteer time or whatever. I guess I wouldn't really feel like I own.
If you had volunteered something here or accepted an invitation to do some extra help, would you felt some ownership here then?
Then I'm contributing something. And again, yeah. it's not really ownership either. I don't know.
I think it's citizen responsibility. It gets back to that language. Yeah.
yeah.
I think we have opportunities for citizen responsibility, though. We're in our rooms, the use of water, and in the lavatories and showers, and you're separating the waste paper from the compost and plastic things. I think those are all but they're spelled out for you, so that
it gets back to the stratification of what are those citizen responsibilities, because those are all minimal, basic, and everybody's
right.
got to do that.
Right.
We have some higher level citizen responsibilities that some are able and some probably are not able to
mm-hmm.
participate. But again, there's an accountability and a responsibility to be effective. I don't think any village ever has 100% unanimity and everybody contributing all the same amount. It just isn't going to happen. It's utopia and it doesn't exist. But you still outline the expectations, say there's some minimal and some higher needs, and we need to meet this for the life of the village. Who can help?
Well, then there's one other thing too is age groups. You've got the little kids and you've got the 80 years old and
mm-hmm.
everything in between. So I don't know if you'd expect them all to do the same thing.
Well, that's all right. I originally said that a family unit is responsible for something. And so where the kids could help, then it's up to that family unit that parcel out the 4 hours or whatever they're responsible for. You know, the family unit is one, you know, maybe it's prorated. Family unit of four is 4 hours, family unit of one is however.
A lot of them aren't families, they're individuals.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then that's a family unit of one, and it's prorated.
You were gonna say something.
Yes, maybe this is wrong. I'd like to know more about the scholarship. I didn't know there's any idea. Now, can churches raise funds, or how does this?
I'm not sure the different mechanisms, but it was part of I knew this before, but it was in that slide orientation program too, where they said that they want to make sure that Holden is accessible for anyone and that there are financial scholarships available for people to take advantage of, but they didn't say.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. But, so I'm sure that there are multiple ways that they've gotten funds into that scholarship grant for people, but that's something that I think we should get the word out more about, because, and I wonder really how much they can offer. I really think that is a huge barrier for a lot of people.
I probably got to clarify something on that before you leave here with wrong information. There are two scholarship funds here. One is about $12,000, produces about $1,200 a year in scholarship funds. The other is $5,000, produces about $500 a year in scholarship funds.
So that's not very much.
That's not a lot.
Everybody here gets a 25% scholarship. Registration fee is set at 75% of the cost of being here. So everybody here has gotten a scholarship.
But to allow other people who can't even touch the price of coming here.
Those are limited to African-American folk and Africans. Those two scholarships funds I just named have severe limitations on them. None of you will qualify.
So poor whites or Asians or?
Africans and non-traditional constituencies. Is the way that the separate.
So that's something that I think really needs to be.
Does a Lutheran churches, all of them, have a drive each, I mean, maybe one Sunday set aside each year in which they contribute to holding?
Now, we do in ours, we have our own.
Well, so many of the churches have their own camps within their own synods or within their own areas that they support, that I don't think Holden could be one of them, I suppose.
This
but
seems
for
such
most
a great
of them,
voice, though.
Most of the churches are having problems meeting their own expenses in addition to all the extra extra offerings they want for other purposes.
Well, maybe though, one of the questions that was asked of me was fresh ideas on revenue producing and saving strategies for the village. And it's something that's come up that we probably don't have time this morning to really get into, but maybe there is some more thought on revenue producing strategies for scholarship funds. Is that right?
No, we had this discussion when Roger and I went on the museum tour that with today's technology, you know, we keep scathing remarks about that, you know, aberration on the hillside up there, but yet that tailing pile today is probably valuable given technology today that would probably reprocess that and make money at it. And, you know, I don't know that Holden wants to resurrect that issue. I have a question around the generator sitting out there. Those turbines are spinning, generating power for the camp. Is the excess sold? Or is there a way to create excess that can be sold? I mean, if you're looking at generating revenue, and that's a renewable resource, when that water comes down the hillside, I don't know what that turbine is capable of, but I know that you can sell power to the utility companies. And if there's an excess here, I don't know what happens to it. Maybe there's no way to capture it given the remoteness, I don't know. But those are sustainable and ongoing, and you know, otherwise we're looking at you getting into your pocketbook type ways, and long term that's very difficult to sustain.
Down. Also, it was mentioned that everybody who comes here gets a 25% scholarship, and some, I think we've had some of us had earlier discussions about maybe making that clear, that a lot of people don't realize when they register that essentially when they pay what's on the bottom line, that they're accepting a 25% scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So we might be able to just articulate that differently so that some people would choose to say I'll pay the full amount, and then that would allow.
I've got a grade here. I've got $60 basic, but you can only get one.
That's right. You know, if you sign here, you're accepting your 25% scholarship. If you sign on the line below, you're going to pay the full amount, you know, whatever the difference is, with recognition that that scholarship money is then available for somebody else.
You think that's a good idea?
I think it should
to
be
make
an option.
That clear.
Yeah.
It's an option.
I think
there's a lot of people that can afford to.
Rude awakening for somebody that mistakenly signs on the wrong butterfly so it doesn't happen. But
well, you're in a trickery in this
building. Yeah, yeah. I thought I was paying X and then I paid X plus 10, 25%.
Well, let me, another question that came up is, how should resources be allocated here in the village? And let me give you some examples.
How should what?
Resources.
You know, this is a village with limited resources, but, so how do we allocate them? For example, housing, you know, where people are given housing. And some people say, well, some housing is better than other housing. On what, and we can't change the housing, right? So there's some dormitories, there's some chalets, and they're different. So how should a village allocate resources like housing?
I thought the chalets were mostly for staff, aren't they?
Well, that's currently.
Staff are citizens and you're citizens, so is that clear?
So everybody's a citizen, so how would you allocate housing? Another thing would be, who gets paid for service, how many days off you have for people that are here longer term? Days off would be a resource as well, right?
Well, I see nothing wrong in having staff have chalets, they come here, they have the studies, they get ready for their, if they're in the dormitory where there are a lot of people, they can't have a quiet. I can see the chalet.
Sure, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Okay, that's expensive.
I was curious if that's a big issue.
Yeah.
We lived in mining camps and, you know, the staff.
Well, some people refer to the projects down here and the other side of the tracks over here. Well, I'm just saying that that's village life and that happens in the village.
To me, that's the 10% that you never make happy.
But those are real issues in a village, right? And so we need to think about that and
Aren't all permits in all the dormitories about the same? I've only been in two of them.
I don't know.
Where are lodges other than 1, 2, 3, and 4? Where are other people sleeping?
In the hotel?
In the hotel.
Are there?
And above here. There are rooms above here.
But I think the question is, how, you know, what, one reason would be longer term staff that have made a longer citizen commitment to the village.
Yeah.
Where they're raising their families here and they've got family units.
They should be entitled to the
Seems to me that should be a consideration.
Sure.
So their length of commitment and service to the village could count for something.
Right.
And that's important. Things like days off and pay for service. And those are some other things.
Well, those who are administering things around here would know what the need is and how many hours they could have off or whatever.
Who nominates that decision?
I'm not sure. But you would think that those decisions.
That's issues that the board would need to address.
Seems to me there must be a policy somewhere that says, you know, people within, you know, that are here for this duration and within this requirement. And if it isn't spelled out, I guess I could come back again, is this really an issue? I mean, is somebody having trouble with the way it's being acted out now? And if so, then what's the right thing to do? Is there a misworded policy that needs to be adjusted? Is there a board that doesn't understand the interpretation of that? Or what's the issue, but then what's the right thing to do?
Yeah. Well, the person that suggested this to me is that, first of all, policies are always made to be broken. So you can always change a policy. You can have a rule in a village,
sure.
But if it's not working very well, right, or you can adjust it. So you can always, this is not saying, the suggestion, one person brought it up, is that there is a policy about how much time people get out of the village, but people ask for exceptions to the rule.
Uh-huh.
So extenuating circumstances.
Sure.
But when you have a responsibility trying to make it work for the greater good, then sometimes, you know, it has sharp edges on it sometimes.
Well, what if they say that they get a day off a week? Well, if something exceptional comes off, maybe they could get 2 days that week and then work 2 weeks without a day off or something. I mean, that's an exception.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that some of those exceptions would work.
So
but if they have a general policy, any rule they say can be broken on time at times. But at least if the general one works pretty well, why not keep it?
So I mean, I don't know, I don't have an answer to that, but we can certainly.
Well, the important thing is that it's perceived as very fair for the different volunteers who have different jobs. And that's a hard thing to balance because there are some volunteer jobs you get assigned that take more time every day. than others, so it's, you're gonna have to balance them the number of days they get off. Some get, like the waitress people in the dining room, when I was here, you put in half day, like 5 days a week. And then you have an opportunity to go to some of the sessions and be a part of the village in other ways. If you are overworking your volunteers, then that compromises their participation in other aspects of life. So again, the policy should make sure that for the different types of jobs, there are this similar number of hours, if you can, mm-hmm. give to them, mm-hmm. that are free for them to choose what they want to do outside of their volunteer.
Well, comes back to that flexibility piece that seems to come up often in our conversation here. Let me just feedback you some things, because I think a lot of these themes sort of come together. I'm sorry I don't have more sort of information on some of these things, but let me read my notes back to you, because I thought I'd pull these together. To try to do something about aligning the mission of the village, maybe getting that out to everybody before they come, to talk a little bit about people, when they come here, become a citizen in this village, and that they have responsibility. We have a shared responsibility then to make a contribution. So to do some mission work, to try to build sort of a shared sense of you're coming into a community and a village as a citizen, and to try to get people set for that, more prepared in advance. I think some of the things we talked about in terms of relationships, that a lot of people felt that we feel comfortable with people we know and not strangers. And so that, when we talked about the diversity issue, that makes it difficult. That you want to be in a village where you feel comfortable and not among strangers.
But can I just comment on that? Because I think if we just leave it there,
it goes nowhere.
I know, because I live in a very diverse neighborhood in Minneapolis, and I miss that diversity here. And I think I feel very comfortable with people who are very different from me, because that's what I live in. Mm-hmm. So I think we want to create a village that has that opportunity to be with people.
That's the way the rest of us are.
And so how do you go about doing that? And
right.
And my thought on that is, you have people like Daryl here, who's probably part of a network somewhere else, that based on his awareness of what goes on here, he would probably have an idea of how to tap into another network. And I think you have to network that.
Right.
At the grassroots level, with people that have access to it. And we have lots of capable people, Sharon, Daryl, Larry, that, you know, disperse and go back. Now, how do you tap into their accessibility to other networks to pull in the diversity that you're trying to create?
Right.
And
there are different church groups, you know, Hispanic, yeah. Lutheran churches, and mm-hmm. African-American churches in the Lutheran Church, and other specific Asian Lutheran churches that, like you're saying, we can connect with, get the word out
right.
about Holden so that they know about this place.
Especially for scholarships for them.
Yeah.
What percentage is Lutheran? I think there's lots of different denominations.
You're right.
Talked yes, to a Catholic person this morning.
Yeah, you're right. We should go out to different churches besides yeah. just the Lutheran connection.
That's
right.
Yeah. But that's the idea of building a network. Who can tap into those networks?
But it's rooted in a Lutheran tradition, it's part of the mission.
Yeah.
So that, and some people in here need to kind of at least carry that forth, right? So to make sure, some citizens need to help us make sure that it's rooted in our tradition.
You have to get out a lot of other religions there. They might could okay. take over eventually, and it would no longer be a basic Lutheran camp. I mean, that's probably wouldn't happen. But
so what you're saying is that that some of us are feeling more and more comfortable with, I mean, diversity is where we feel comfortable.
It's the only way the rest of us are going to
get comfortable.
Some
of us in the village right. feel comfortable when everybody seems to, when the village is less diverse, we feel less comfortable.
Very much so.
Yeah, that's not, and so that in a way we're among strangers.
Right.
But it seems like a strange place. So we need to work hard. And the way that you think we might do that is to be intentional, do more intentional recruitment.
Yeah. I mean, you were going to ask, you chose your words exactly right the same way. You're going to intentionally embrace diversity, which means we're going to go out and say, you're different, so we want you to come. In order to jumpstart the diversity issue, I mean, it's kind of like affirmative action. I mean, there's a pro and a con to that whole issue. Mm-hmm. but how else are you gonna do it? You know, we're gonna ask people to intentionally tap into networks that are different to force the diversity issue that we feel is so important. Now you've got some artificial things going on.
Is that related to money too? I mean, I think.
Yeah.
Could be.
For many, not.
Yeah. I mean, we're not just talking about ethnicity here or religious background. It could be socioeconomic. I mean, a whole thing, the whole definition of diversity comes under the microscope.
So then maybe we have to even try in that recruitment to get some, if we're trying to strengthen the participation of certain groups that are underrepresented now, then we have to get them thinking with us about what they're doing, what makes for an environment where they can be healed and renewed and refreshed, right? And some new ideas on that.
Who else views life as part of a community, and where do we see that actively manifested, and can we network then with those communities to say, you know, we need to share the richnesses in our diversities, and can we somehow share in that?
So that we come to a village and we all feel that it's the right place for us. That we want to be in the same place. But to be more intentional about that. Would you be willing to help with that?
Very much, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of communities in Minneapolis, of course, we've got a lot of people from Minnesota already, but yeah.
So much diversity.
Yeah. Well, and through the ELCA, the Division for Multicultural Mission, or I forget the exact title of that division, but I know they've got a lot of good connections with people of various backgrounds in a way that we could be working with to get the word out more.
So you'd have that'd be something that some of you would be willing to take up as a citizen responsibility?
And scholarships too. If you're saying there isn't much money available for scholarships, we need to get the word out to get more money into that fund. If we're, again, saying we're committed to bring more people from different backgrounds here, where economics might be a barrier.
And it'd become part of your action plan to enhance the diversity issue is to make it available. And so, right. You know, item 1B becomes scholarship funding.
Yeah. But you wouldn't have to give, there are hundreds of thousands of families of different races that are equal to the economic level of the people participating now.
Right, same cross-section, right, yeah. Right. And so that's not always going to be a barrier. But the cultural barrier is going to be more awkward. And that's why I think there's going to be a real period of transition here in Holden. You know, as in the big society, that it's going to be uncomfortable, I think, as it evolves to accommodate the different things that need to be in place here to make it a healing place.
Expect your dialogue and change. Because this will be a change for those traditionalists who have come to Holden for the last X number of years with one view, and now we're talking about intentionally changing that.
How long has that mission been in place? Mission statement with its diversity component?
It's been revised four times.
Four times?
About a third of the language is original to the 1960s.
Is that diversity piece go back very far? Or is that really?
That
saying?
Goes back 10 years.
Well, I feel you were saying it was there. I think that, like, the Vespers don't always have as much life for the younger kids as there could be. And so that's a cultural thing that I think needs to be looked at is the way that we worship together. Are we including different styles that will resonate for all who are here? Is we're all going to have to take our turns. It's not going to speak to everybody in the same way every evening, let's say. But yeah.
And you're not going to change that cultural and ethnic citizenry of the village overnight.
Right.
Maybe part of a 5-year plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, we set
a horizon. No, what I'm saying is it will be a gradual thing. So the people maybe of our generation who have always liked it this way aren't going to be coming for ever either. So, you know, that change will come gradually.
And hopefully that there will be a time for all styles, you know, that we can allow for that flexibility in what you find here.
Well, it's a hard question because it's not politically correct anymore to say, well, we just want to be with people the same as they are. But in order to bring it to life, we all have to believe that it's absolutely essential. And that's difficult, because it's this kind of, now you see it, now you don't. So it gets away from us, because this is a place that's very meaningful to a lot of people, particularly people who've been here before. And to be able to have some consistency in your life and be able to count on it, it's kind of like, well, what happened to the village?
The question I struggle with there is the question of scale of diversity. You could make an argument that Holden Village should be a Lutheran place, because if Holden Village diversifies to the extent that it no longer represents that tradition, that's lost to the family of camps in the world, that being the scale that you're talking about at the time.
So that's...
If Tezay diversified to the extent that it was no longer Tezay, that would be a great loss to the world.
That's an important consideration then for the citizenry of the village to know is what exactly do we mean by diversity? Mm-hmm. Exactly, precisely. What does it look like next year and the year after? And not just in general, but we need to really hone in there so we can say, well, how are we doing? Mm-hmm. And we need to talk about that and then maybe figure out ways that we each can participate. Because if we agreed together what we wanted next year in the diversity of the village, in the life of the village next year, then each of us would be better at sort of assuming some responsibility, maybe having some specific ideas.
Well, yeah, now Lutheran and diversity, what are we talking about? Ethnicity is very different than a Lutheran culture. I guess I'm not sure what you're saying is...
By diversity.
People of different backgrounds is what we were talking about a minute ago. So when you say that
background still doesn't help me. Ethnic backgrounds,
ethnic backgrounds,
nationalistic backgrounds.
Ethnic backgrounds.
We talked about race, ethnicity, religion, age. Right.
But even if you just didn't include different religions, but you're talking about ethnic. The Lutheran Church has a variety of ethnic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of that in the cities, but that's evident in any big city, and they aren't all the same.
Our little center dealt with that because we believe that the participation, we do seminars that are year-long, and there's usually anywhere from 30 to 50 people that participate in the year-long seminar. But they're seminars that are designed for very different perspectives. I mean, that we count on that. That's as important as any other resource that comes in as the discussion in the room. Mm-hmm. And we want different viewpoints and different perspectives, different kinds of experience. Mm-hmm. So we recruit for diversity and accept on the basis of diversity. We've defined that. And so if we get too many people with a background in education, registration closes for that group, and we have quotas. We tell everybody
religion
that.
Religion is not a dimension you're looking at.
Well, it is.
Is it?
I mean, that's another dimension that we do look at. Mm-hmm. But we don't want too many people that come in, say, that are working in the church or working in schools or working in... So the work that they do, the sector that they work in and participate in, that's, you know... But we recruit that way. We've had interesting reactions to that, but we also had interesting trades. So that somebody who was signed up early as an educator, but then somebody else much later that's on the waiting list says, well, this is the right year for me because of extenuating circumstances, will make a trade. So I think, you know, it's really challenged me to kind of think more about how do you operationalize.
Is this within your church?
No, this is within the University of Minnesota.
What university?
Which is even a more interesting issue because of being a public institution that can be sued when somebody gets mad. Mm-hmm. So we have to be pretty clear about what our policies are so everybody sort of knows the formula.
Mm-hmm. It's not the university as a whole, it's your center within it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think some people come, they want us? The same thing that they had last year, the year before, they don't want too much change.
But then we have a mission that says, you know, it says something about diversity. Mm-hmm. So then maybe it's about, this isn't the right place for that person. If the community together has agreed that it's important, you know, diversity is important. But I think that's something, it's a hard issue.
On the other hand, that says something about a negative diversity, because it says, under the lordship of Jesus Christ. That's a very non-diverse statement.
From a faith perspective, you're saying, or what? I guess I don't see what you're saying.
I'm saying that this is a village organized to provide in a climate of mutual acceptance under the lordship of Jesus Christ. There's lots of people who don't want to be here under the lordship of Jesus Christ. So we're a non-diverse community.
So what is that saying to the other?
I'm saying that your mission statement includes very intentionally non-diverse elements, as well as it does visions of possible diversity.
So it sets the criteria. Based on that, citizens have to accept the invitation or not.
Well, and I think to me that's a part of transition, and you know, as part of the transition, you can still accommodate those who want the traditionalist through a transition period. You know, maybe it's a 5-year, we always reserve 1 week a month for the traditional Holden experience. But at the end of 5 years, we're going to transition to what our vision has become, and that to be, you know, something much more diverse than what we are now.
But you can say, you can stay very very traditional in the religious aspect, but on ethnic dimensions or political dimensions or whatever, I mean, right. Sky's the limit.
Right.
And which kind of was your argument.
Right. Because you have about 5 minutes left, let me kind of retract and make sure that because I'd like to write this down and pass it forward, but I don't want to do it if I captured your intent wrong. So let me just, that there was a sense that we need to get the mission of the village out to people before they come here, so that we can work it to say, I want to buy into that before I come. What does that mean? That part of that means that they're willing to share responsibility here in the village as a citizen and to make a contribution. And part of that needs to be self-defined, but give people a chance to kind of think on that and get into that rhythm of the village before they come. That we talked about the kinds of relationships that we want to build here in the village, where people do feel responsible, comfortable, and we want to recognize that some people feel comfortable in a more diverse village. So diversity is an important issue, but also in a lot of ways. I mean, a different issue for different people, because sometimes diversity means feeling uncomfortable. Another thing that you mentioned in terms of kind of we might build some relationships here in the village is to have a more intentional dialogue during the orientation for newcomers than about shared responsibility and making contributions, but to help work that through, because of people like myself who come here and sort of enter culture shock. And I need a little bit more assistance to kind of get me jump started. So not just, and maybe even, I think I could do a better job even just having been here for a week of meeting the bus and helping newcomers to the village for the first time, sort of see what some of the tasks are, help them out, be available to kind of show them around to see how they might participate.
This volunteering thing, it's not a demand. I mean, you're not. Some people could come if they're not able to do anything. I mean, they wouldn't be.
Well, they'd have to figure out a way that they could contribute as a citizen, that'd still be a contributing citizen. Maybe to visit. Maybe. I mean, there are lots of ways. But of getting people thinking about coming here to contribute rather than to consume. That we need to be more intentional about that. And ask people for help. Then we talked about relationships and trying to, as a village, develop some new networks to link into some new networks that would help us become a more diverse village. So just ways to recruit and all sorts of ideas about how we do that. And those conversations and networks would also help us figure out what would it take in terms of, do we really need scholarships, or do we need to make sure that the teaching program might be aligned with particular interests or things like that. Then you also, I think, alluded to the fact that maybe it might be helpful, I think I did, that it might be helpful to really define and develop some specific goals over the next few years about what diversity would look like, what kind of diversity, and that would help us be a little bit more intentional about sort of working on the diversity into the village.
Can you put a bullet point, or maybe choose not to remember this group would say don't do it, but when we talk about tapping into networks, I think there are some networks out there that are non-traditional but might be really effective. If we were to go to American Baptist Theological Seminary and say, for 1 week, we'd like a staff and 3 students to show up at Holden to incorporate it. And oh, by the way, we'd like them to contribute in 1 hour sessions to make them an active part of the community. I mean, there are a number of network opportunities out there that we could tap into, I think, to intentionally bring that. You know, and people with a common understanding of what community in Christ might mean, and filter that through a different kaleidoscope, we'd see a different pattern. But.
And some of that would need to be just, before we can do that, we need to define specifically what we mean.
Yeah, what are we trying to accomplish?
Right.
Don't do it.
Some shared understanding about that. That would be an interesting series of discussions to hold in the village now.
Yeah.
You know, and to get people thinking about that, what that might mean, and to see how it means differently. It means different things to different groups, different people here in the village. Then in terms of how we might organize some things differently here in the village, or at least look at it, and part of this may be just lack of information on our part, because we're a little group, the different kinds of mailing and correspondence that currently go out to Lutheran churches, even Lutheran publications, when you mentioned an article in the Lutheran, but a way to kind of strengthen or to get more more people on the outside involved with the citizenry and life in Holden would be to see if there's some things that we might do to sort of open the communication and correspondence with Lutheran congregations around the country, to make sure that that different parts of the country that may not participate as much now do. Let me quickly give these to you. To organize tasks here in the village and sign up, some work, organizational work would have to be done to align, sort of inviting people to assume more responsibility when they come into the village, particularly for short-time citizens or first-time citizens. The signage is an important thing in terms of keeping us as an educated citizenry of a lot of information so we can learn, some of us who aren't as knowledgeable about ways to save and conserve and be good citizens, that's helpful. We talked some about allocation of resources and needing to sort of be flexible, but it's important to have policies as well and to kind of stick by the policies, but also now they have to be flexible. We talked about revenue-producing strategies and the idea of scholarships that to strengthen that everybody comes here, all of us get are on a 25% scholarship, and to make sure that everybody knows that, and that give people a chance if they would like to sort of, instead of accepting their scholarship, perhaps share it for somebody else, that might be helpful. Also, a revenue-producing possibility might be looking into excess energy if it could be sold, just as a possibility, as a question. And that to make sure, sort of in the broader context, that people choose and make a commitment to come here. That it needs to be, we need to make sure that citizens coming to the village know that they are making a commitment to participate and to be responsible. How did I?
I have a question to ask on this revenue raising. In the past, when we've been here, there's been an offering taken for Holden. Is that not true this year?
No, it hasn't been true any of the years I've been here.
Well, I can recall writing a check when we've been here in the past, and so I came prepared to do that, but I wanted it to go to the work of Holden.
The end of your evaluation form that you can fill out when you leave the village, the last line on that form says, you've been here on a 25% scholarship. If you'd like to make a gift to the village, please do so. There's a card implanted on the desktop at the registration area that says the same thing. We're relying on a couple of ways like that at this point to encourage, but we're not taking offerings for ourselves.
Well, it's another way of doing it than that.
We take an offering for ourselves 3 times a year when the letter goes out asking people to contribute.
I see.
Okay.
Want to ask you this question. What's your capacity here, and how many during the summer, how close do you get to your capacity for number of people that you can accommodate?
92%.
So there's room for 92% more?
That's overbooking 16%.
That's running real close.
We overbook 16%. Makes our registrars very nervous.
Yeah, I also, I wanted to just give you a little bit of feedback. Thank you for coming this morning.
Is the fact that this group isn't bigger related to the fact that most of us here are those as guests and Holden's problems are not our problems?
Well, I think one of the things is that I probably wasn't as attentive myself to kind of schedule this session. A lot of the staff or volunteers in the village are working in the morning, so it's more difficult for them because they're out working.
There's a weekly session this afternoon at 3:45 entitled Mission Management and Money, Holden Village, and you're invited to that, and I can be more clear about some of your questions.
I think the other thing I just wanted to tell you is what I heard is that when you started out, we use the word they more often. By the end of even our short conversation, we started using we, which is kind of an interesting thing. That, you know, when we start thinking of ourselves, if this is our village, and that we have a responsibility for the life of this village. I think it's interesting how we've changed our way we refer to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Revenue generation ideas, I mean, that to me, that's brainstorming, and there's some specifics I wouldn't know, but two, I'm a real avid hunter and fisher person, and I would probably be willing to pay, especially if I were to come out here, and I hacked up the hole in the lake yesterday, and I thought, well, I'd love to come up here and pitch a tent, go deer hunting for a week, but that packing out of the meat would be a tough one. The only way I'd even probably consider is if there was a horse available, but most people like myself that are in tune to that don't mind paying a reasonable fee for that. They hold in, but there's probably some licensing situations with the state of Washington you have to get into there. But what about, you've got this great outdoor area around here, what are the licensing stipulations? Could that generate revenue for Holden if you had people here as volunteers to take people out on 3-day, whatever, packing trips, and there'd be a nominal fee involved that way?
So that one of the jobs that you might have would be to be sort of a coach.
A guide.
Well, you're looking, I mean, it's a guiding service. And
there's an interesting leadership question. We had an 8-month conversation last winter, absolutely interminable, which resulted in the winter community voting a total ban on weapons in the village of all kinds. So a person who wanted to hunt could not stay in these buildings if they insisted on keeping their weapon with them.
Mm-hmm. Which most of us, you know, although, you know, if there's a safe area outside
they
of the building.
They voted not even to provide a storage area.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing that's an interesting thing, though, is that we quickly start seeing ourselves as a market economy, where, as opposed to a bartering economy. You know, because one of the things that we could have as a task is that you come in and you'd be willing to kind of help. I mean, one of the things you could do would be to help people with hiking and, you know, if you help me, I'll do your dishes or, you know, I mean, we can barter.
You're just looking for a way to generate revenue. That was an idea.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I know what the fees are for a 5-day drop camp type hunt. You're talking between $600 and $1,000 just to... get my stuff up the mountain and come check on me every other day and then haul meat out at the end of the week. I mean, if there's nominal cost involved.
That's still possible because it's legal to hunt.
Oh, yeah.
In Washington State and on federal property.
The idea of it.
What that particularly, what the community board essentially was, none of us may hunt.
Sure.
In essence.
I'd pay $600 to $1,000 if they wanted to meet me at the boat and get me up the mountain. And if we have to ride around camp so we don't take weapons through the camp on horses that Holden could provide for, you know, it's probably about a 30-day window there. What about summer backpack fishing trips? You've got this whole wealth of lakes up here that some are, you know, 10 years from now, I'm not sure I'm gonna wanna hike to them. Well, does Holden wanna have an outfitting capability and charge cost plus 20% and generate revenue? I don't know.
Every one of those staff beds takes a bed from a paying customer. We have 2 months to raise our year's revenue.
Now, what months? You said you have 92% capacity. I mean,
between June 15th and August 24th or so.
Oh, okay.
So there's an opportunity then.
That's when we can raise our money.
What percent capacity do you have during the rest of the year?
Well, it changes because we shut lodges 1 through 4 completely.
Oh.
They're drained and shut. We can't heat them. We go from 270 kilowatts of power available right now to sometimes down to 40 kilowatts of power available in the winter. We have the capacity of 2 large suburban homes as far as electricity through the deepest months of the winter.
The stream flow slows enough that you're not able to generate beyond that. So is there an alternative source of power, or is 40 still adequate? Or are the lights dim?
40 gives you an hour on your hot water heater a day. Most of them will heat 40 gallons of water in that hour. So you can take 3 or 4 showers, but they're pretty fast. You have to have a load controller that can instantly shift the power around the village so that when they fire up the dish machine,
yep,
and the turbochargers to bring that water up to 190 degrees so that it creates sanitary dishes, almost everything in the village has to shut down. But of course, none of the things in the village basically are linked by such a system at this point, because that would call for burying utilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So is there a way to, is there any way that, I mean, it sounds like there's people know enough about utilities and electricity that that's not the first time somebody suggested excess power, and is there a market for it, and could it be sold off?
When the house on mine ran the place, they had 50 miles of line, which brought their power up from Chelan. We could not possibly maintain 50 miles of line.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have any place to sell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
There was an old turbo plant at Lucerne that Holden owned on a license at one point, and we sold it to the boat club down there, the excess. But that's basically there isn't any, when there's excess, nobody needs it.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the time, we don't have it either.
It's not needed because it's not economical to get it there. But
it's sort of like the dreamer who decided that this should be a solar building.
Mm-hmm.
Really a great idea. Except in the winter, when you need the solar power, the heat and light,
it's very
snow is up the.
You have less than 1 hour of sunshine up there as it goes between the peaks.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This was a complete waste.
Mm-hmm.
But it was
like
a great idealistic idea at the time.
Is that like an
enclosed
house that do you out there?
It's intended to move the hot air to the various levels of this building,
mm-hmm,
but it doesn't work when it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter. And in the summer, it tends to be too hot.